card.
Nice.
Okay, we're good. Green lights.
We're good. Yep.
All green lights.
Excellent. Alex, did you enjoy the I left in all your like vamping while we're going to the bathroom at the start of the last episode? I feel like maybe you don't listen to the podcast, but I left it all in.
You left it all in? I don't remember. I do remember when you two left. I said something. I just don't remember what. But thanks for leaving that in. I know I don't listen to it.
I figured. You were talking about everyone's favorite Grey's Anatomy character, and I'm happy to report that no one has reached out to tell me what theirs was. So
that's okay.
It's just... I'm glad you're joining me for another hour of shouting into the void about a movie.
Yeah, I'm making my way through that show.
Or maybe it demonstrates the credibility of our listenership.
That's true.
Maybe there's just zero overlap between horror movies and Grey's Anatomy.
There you go.
Yeah, that must be it. 100% that must be it. People listen to this.
It's gotta be that one. It's gotta be that one. Yeah, we're the most popular podcast on YouTube.
We're on YouTube.
Anyway. We're not on YouTube. I don't know why I said it. I thought I could let that comment go by, but I should know better.
We're going to hold you to that.
Perhaps if we had started an hour earlier, you would have been a little more sleepy, Luke, and it would have slipped past your keen eye, but
this
no.
This is why I want us to record an hour later now, is that, I feel better, more ready.
You ready? Well, let's do it then. Hey, this is Nothing to Fear. It's a podcast that comes out every month. We talk about horror movies. My name is Billy Schultz. I run the damn thing, and I'm joined by Luke and Alex, who are my two very good friends. And we're recording for the first time in this year of 2024. So, Luke Mason, how was your holiday season? How was your December and early January? How are you?
Good, good, good. What is 2024 anyway?
It was four starting a podcast in our case.
Yeah, I guess that's true. No, it was good. I have had a relatively enjoyable holiday season. Back at it. I'm very excited to have nothing to report. I am breathlessly reporting nothing.
Have you made it through the part of the year where the sun like sets by 2 p.m. or whatever because of the mountain shadow? Or
it still kind of sets by that time anyway. But on the plus side, it's hardly ever sunny here, so you don't really know.
There you go. It's hardly sunny in Nelson is a much different TV show.
not much sun in the winter in Nelson. It is very beautiful when it is, from about 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. It's gorgeous. Every 3 weeks.
Excellent.
Yes.
Everyone gets a day off. They get to go outside.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you've got nothing major to report. I'm glad it was a time of rest, and I'll turn it over now to Alex. How are you? How was your holiday, and how are you?
It was good. It was very restful. I saw family for a very appropriate amount of time, and I hung out with some friends, and I watched a fuck ton of Grey's Anatomy. That's a measurement. Yeah. I'm almost on season 16.
Okay. Holy moly.
Yeah. Yeah, racing against the clock, making sure I finish 19 by the time 20 comes out in March, which I think I'll get there. Jeez. What else happened? Since December, you said?
Yeah, well, we didn't record at all in December. Oh, we just released those two episodes. The Insidious episodes came out in November or December and January, respectively. So
right.
Haven't seen you in a while.
I went to Seattle for a day, and then, that's it. That's it. That's it.
Nice.
Pretty good.
Watch a lot of sports, you know.
So I have to ask, you said that Addison was your favorite character at the time you were when we last recorded. Has that changed?
No, that has not changed. No, that has not changed.
Who's Addison?
Yeah. Addison, not Shepherd, just Montgomery, Addison Montgomery. She is a double board certified neonatal and OBGYN.
I see.
She is Derek Shepherd, or aka McDreamy's ex-wife. And she comes up at the end of season 2 to shock the world and being like, you must be the intern who screwed my husband.
What's the actress? Who's the actress?
Kate Walsh.
Kate Walsh. That's what her name is. What else has she done? Has she just done Grey's Anatomy? This is a Grey's Anatomy podcast now, by the way. Sorry, everyone.
She's done Private Practice, which is her spinoff show from Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure she's done lots of other things, but I don't know.
You don't know. She's not in this movie, that's for sure.
No, she's not. There's not a lot of people in this movie.
Not a ton. As for myself, I'm doing
Well. Billy, how was your December and how was your holidays?
Yeah. Thank you so much for asking. It was great. I got through my round of final exams. Happy to report that the grade train is going strong. A couple of A's, three A's and one B this semester. So very happy with the outcome. I got to...
Damn, are you a cut of steak?
Yeah, triple A. Thank you. Took me slightly too long to realize where you were going with that, and I was about to be offended, but I very good, very nice. No, I got to spend Christmas and New Year's in Colorado with Amy, so we got to have some wonderful time there. It was beautiful weather. We got to go on some hikes, got to go see some movies, and generally just like hang out. So it was beautiful. I was really happy to relax, and now I'm back in January, ready for the next year. All good. But yeah, let's talk about a movie, shall we?
Sure.
We're going to talk about Creep from 2014, which it was a Mark Duplass idea. And I think I had come across this movie when we were looking at found footage movies for Found Footage Month, and it sort of came up, but I didn't end up picking it because it was like, oh, I don't know. I want to pick something that's maybe a little bit more supernaturally. I think I passed on it for some reason, but other than that, I didn't know what it was, and I now know what it is, and I know there's a sequel. So before we watch it, I didn't know anything about it. But Luke, I believe you picked this one, or you suggested it. So
yeah.
What made you tap this one?
Well, we needed a movie to do next, so
a rigorous,
yes,
exhaustive process.
Yes, I'd seen it before once. Around-ish when it came out, maybe a little bit after. So I was like, well, we could do that. It's like a Mark Duplass is a relatively famous actor. He's not like an A-list, but if you know actors, you've heard of him before and seen him in stuff. So he was actually in a great movie from 2012 with Aubrey Plaza called Safety Not Guaranteed. If you ever...
Oh, really?
Like a really, really kind of like wholesome, uplifting film. And he's like... And if you want to have a slightly better perspective of him instead of this movie, I'd recommend that one because he's actually like a pretty thoughtful guy and a really great actor, and not
he
just
was thoughtful,
a creep. He wasn't just a creep.
Yeah. Well, I think definitely the way his face and his demeanor looks really played into the titular creep of this movie. But I knew Mark Duplass from. He was on the Mindy Project, which was Mindy Kaling's show that she did after The Office. And he played, along with Jay Duplass, his brother, they played like a team of midwives who ran a competing practice to Mindy's like more scientifically medical, OBGYN practice. So they were both like holistic, naturopath medicine men. Which is just very funny.
I think that both of them, they cut their teeth in comedy more than drama because they're funny. There's definitely like a deadpan. Jay Duplass, I think, was in, I think he's been in stuff with Will Forte before. So there's definitely some comedy there. And this movie isn't totally unfunny. if it's like
but it
kind
does...
of a weird, cringy funny. Yeah. So
it's definitely, yeah, for sure.
So I don't know. I was just like, oh, well, that was it is found footage, but I think it's, I don't know. I mean, Alex has never been shy of having some sort of thought about found footage, which I always enjoy.
He loves it.
I feel like I feel like this one is less offensive as a found footage because the guy asks him to film it all. Like, that's the whole premise of this existing, is that Mark Duplass's character asked him to film it. The meta question you can ask about found footage is like, why are we seeing it? if he's got it hidden away in his little cabinet, how are we getting access to this? In philosophy we call that one question too many.
Fair enough. Before we keep diving into it, because we're just like we're already like basically starting the conversation, I want to get your initial salvo, Alex. Like, what did you know about this movie going into it?
I didn't know anything about it. Never heard of it. Luke told me it was a found footage movie, and I was like, oh, great. And then I looked at the length of the movie. I was like, okay, that's not as bad. And then I went into it. Yeah,
I knew that would be a selling point.
We didn't watch it till yesterday. I had put it off for a little while, but I also wanted to keep it fresh. And I was like, oh, it's getting late. We should watch this movie. It might be long. And I pull it up on Netflix, and it's like 80 minutes. And I was like, oh, baby, great. And then I push play, and it's like 77 minutes. And I was like, oh, baby, even better.
That's the same length as The Rescuers Down Under. It's like a Disney film.
Exactly. It's like a Disney film. But we'll do a little bit of stats going into it. Or as always, check out doesthedogdie.com for parts of this movie that are triggering. There's nothing like violent or bloody, but there is a couple discussions that are a little bit hard to hear, especially if you're sensitive around topics about sex acts involving break in and tie up play and stuff. So that was hard to
there's also like a pretty gruesome murder.
There's a slight gruesome murder at the very end. And then the implication that this has happened many times. So yes. I'd say, just like some conversations. But it's very, very mild. There's jump scares, as with any found footage movie. To the point of, like, funny jump scares, I would say. But we'll get into it.
Yeah, I was laughing at those. Yeah, super funny.
Just laughing. Alex laughing all the way to the bank. But yeah, let's get into the trailer. And then we can hear the synopsis. The trailer for Creep.
All right, we are leaving the flatlands and we are heading up towards the mountaintop. The ad said $1,000 for the day, filming services. Discretion is appreciated.
A yellow door. And realizing that no one knows I'm here.
Hi! Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to scare you.
I'm assuming you're Aaron.
Yeah, I'm Aaron. Nice to meet you.
Joseph. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is going to be a good day.
So the reason I've hired you is because I have terminal brain cancer, and I want you to film me to make a video diary for my unborn son. You ready for this?
Okay. Joseph!
This is called an adventure. Woo-hoo! We don't know exactly where we're going, but I have a feeling. When you follow those feelings, great things can happen. Don't ever forget that.
Joseph?
There was about 2 seconds there where it looked like you wanted to kill me.
Joseph, I think I'm gonna head back. You see my keys?
One drink, okay?
Bottoms up.
Hello.
You need to get out of that house right now.
Why do you look scared? Don't be scared. It'll all be over soon.
Creep is a 2014 American found footage psychological horror film directed by Patrick Bryce. In his directorial debut, from a story by Bryce and Mark Duplass, who both star in the film. Filmed as a found footage, Bryce portrays a videographer assigned to record an eccentric client played by Duplass.
That's right.
That's it. I've heard that this movie has spawned the genre of mumblegore, which is kind of like indie if like indie shoegazing music was a horror movie. This is kind of what I've heard it described as. So I've heard it be called a new word. New words have been invented for this genre. to the point of...
Yes, but...
being called Mumblegore, yeah.
What does any of those words mean?
I don't know. I just read it on the internet, Luke, and now I'm saying it on a podcast, so that's all the work I have to do.
Yeah, but what does indie shoegazing mean? I've never even heard these things before.
You've never heard of shoegaze?
Yeah, like this is surprising.
As a genre?
As a music genre, yeah.
No.
Alex?
No?
What's that?
Okay.
Educate us. Yeah, you're the expert.
Essentially, it's just like it's heavy guitar music, really guitar driven. Mm-hmm. And the reason that it's called shoegaze is because a lot of the effects are driven heavily by effects pedals.
Right.
To make it like very, you know, that sound, the shoegaze sound. And they call it shoegaze is because the performers, when they're on stage, they're just looking down at their feet because they're manipulating the pedals. Hence, it's called shoegaze.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
And what does that have to do
with Mumblegore? What's a big shoegaze band? My Bloody Valentine, that Irish band. Are they Irish?
Sure.
Yeah. I think they're shoegaze.
Okay.
They were made famous by that movie with Scarlett Johansson and Bill Murray, Lost in Translation.
Okay. Oh, okay.
A song in that, yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So that makes sense. What does that have to do with the movie Creep?
Because I've heard shoegaze be compared to mumblecore, which is like also a type of musical genre. I feel like I'm getting very in the weeds of something I don't know a lot about. But I think mumblecore is also like when people are just kind of singing softly, they're not enunciating a lot, they're kind of mumbling, right? And it's like the suffix core, as you know, like cottage core or any other kind of, you know, internetification of word. I'm so lost. And then because this is a horror movie and gore is associated with horror movie, we have the word mumble gore.
Good thing we had subtitles for this movie though, huh?
Boy, oh boy.
Because I could totally hear what they were saying.
What, so like, is the idea that there's a lot of mumbling that happens in this movie?
No, it's just very low budget. It's very like, there's no big effects. There's no big like acting moments. Okay. It feels very improvisational. It's not as like directed. It's just like kind of what we saw. Like if you've seen the movie Creep, which I will say, check it out. It's very like people fucking around making YouTube videos and minimalism and stuff like that. So
we filmed this on a long weekend, you know?
Yeah.
And so that
I also read.
That's not Mumblegore?
That's not Mumblegore.
Okay.
Listen,
okay.
I'm reporting.
I think I got
third to fifth hand. Good. I'm glad. I'm glad we could. That was worth it. But apparently, from what I saw on the IMDb page, citing this source, the budget for this movie was $0. That's what they said.
Wow. How much did it make?
They spent.
Does it say?
It was released on Netflix, so they don't have any box office information. So, but I think it was literally just like, what's his name? The director, Price. I can't remember his first name. And Mark Duplass just like goofing around, like, let's just make a movie. Okay. And they did.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, even somebody watching it once now, it's like a success. If it costs $0.
Yeah, exactly. It costs $0. Yeah, very minimalist cast. Only two people on screen. Not even any extras as far as I could spot. The only other voice we hear is a lady on the other end of a phone call. So it's like no cast, all found footage. The director is the star of the movie, or he's the filmmaker. And yeah, so Luke, I'd love to hear your thoughts about this movie. You said you've seen it once before. So how did a second viewing, you know, elaborate the story? What little there was of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much story. I think if I had to take one big takeaway is that Mark Duplass's character is much more psychotic than he seems. And I think that that's a really hard, I think he did a great job because the actor has to play a psychopath playing a weirdo who's like a little bit pathetic, you know? Mm-hmm. And then also sympathetic, but not too sympathetic. Like, I don't know. I was impressed because it's one thing to like play a character as an actor or actress, but it's another thing to play a character who's also themselves being duplicitous, because you kind of have three levels of character at that, or like yourself, the character you're playing, and the hiddenness of the character that you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like three levels of theory of mind you have to get into, and I just think he was awesome at that. Watching it on the rewatch, I have to say Aaron seems like a total idiot, and nobody deserves to be murdered, but fuck did that guy walk into a trap that was clearly neon lit saying, "This is a trap." So,
oh yeah, I've got some thoughts about that for later down the line, but yeah.
Yeah. But no, I liked the setting. I think, you know, we've all, one of the perennial points we make about horror movies is that if this genre does anything well, it's great settings. And the forest and the cabin was awesome. And even the lake at the end was a really cool affecting. To the atmosphere of it was really, really cool in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just think it's like, it's not a great film, but it's a pretty good one that is, you know, at 77 minutes worth your time. And mm-hmm. I have also seen the sequel, and I think it is also pretty okay. good. It's no worse. So.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah. It's definitely like a spine tingling, like, oh, what is going on here? Yeah, first time you're watching it and you don't know what's going on, it's definitely a little creepier than the second time.
Mm-hmm. That's the name of the title. Mm-hmm. Fuck. That's the name of the movie.
That's the name of the title.
No. Yeah. I like that's the name of the fuck.
That's the name of the fuck. Well, yeah, what about you, Alex? How did you like this movie aside from the runtime?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like a pretty straightforward story, and there's like nothing really like... Like, I was left with zero questions by the end. You know how sometimes you're like, ooh, that's...
Okay.
They didn't conclude this in a way that I would have liked, or what happened here? It was like wrapped up pretty well. And
yeah,
and it was pretty tight. And it was a tight 77 minutes, which I really appreciated.
Yeah.
I think for the first half of the movie, I found the found footage to be not very cliche, and to be like, you know, this is, like, as Luke said, this is very appropriate because... You know, Joseph is literally asking Aaron to film him, and that's part of the job. So it was like very, yeah, I was like, yeah, this is fine. Found footage, no problem. And then the second half of the movie, this is essentially one of my bigger problems with the found footage horror genre, is it's just in this world, why would Aaron continue to be filming himself after he, you know, escapes from this cabin and hopes to never see Joseph again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Why is he still filming? Yeah.
It just wasn't... It took me out of the immersion, which, you know... honestly, for me, if the movie had just ended at the time that Aaron kind of escaped the cabin, I think that would have been, like, probably the best found footage movie I've ever seen. In terms of, like...
Because it would have been 55 minutes long.
Well, no, in terms of using found footage... As
yeah, the, no, exactly.
As the storytelling medium, it would have been like, yeah, totally. This is so like, this is believable. I can see that found like the style is being used completely as the story format, which is like really cool. And I think the way the genre should be intended. But obviously, you know, you don't want to end the movie just like that. So you want to have like, you know, the second half of the movie where he's getting stalked and all that stuff. And but then. Continuing to have that movie, the second half of the movie be found footage was like, I couldn't help but cross my arms, be like, why is he continuing to film himself? This makes no sense. You know?
Yeah, it's like so throwaway line of I got to document everything. It's like, okay.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Like, do you have to?
Which I don't like. I feel like maybe from what I know of the sequel, I haven't seen it and I haven't really got any spoilers. So I'm not after any spoilers right now, but I think they sort of address that by having the person who is in the sequel be like a YouTuber who is somebody who's in the practice of filming themselves all the time, or like a vlogger or something like that. So that is a little bit more of a reason why they would be filming all these like weird things happening. But I had the exact same, you know, bone to pick Alex about, like, after he gets out, he's just still like filming himself. Like, I know he's a filmmaker, but even if it was like we saw other stuff that he was filming and like you could see Aaron or you could see Joseph like in the background of shots or something as like, you know, other footage he's trying to do on other jobs, I feel like that would have been more interesting than it being like, oh yeah, I got to document everything and make sure it's down there. Also,
it was really immersive up until it wasn't, and then it was not immersive at all. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Agreed. I want to get to that sort of second half a little bit more, but I want to circle back to Luke, you mentioned about Mark Duplass and his absolute acting, you know, chops, just being incredible, playing this character who's like so sympathetic. His whole ruse, for people who haven't watched it, is he hires Aaron to film him to make like a day in the life video that he's going to leave to his like unborn son or unborn child. And because he says he's got like an inoperable brain tumor, he's got 2 or 3 months to live before the cancer gets him. And so he wants to just sort of leave a record behind to show his son what it was like. And then it like very quickly descends past like acceptable filming to like stuff just gets weirder and weirder. And I thought he
starts weird.
You know, it starts weird. Like it starts with like a weird jump scare and then a hug. And then the first thing they film is tubby time. Like he's like, oh, I want you to film me pretending to give a bath to my kid. And it's just like, okay. But I appreciated the line that he gives where he's like, yeah, you know, I have a brain tumor. It's the size of a baseball. It does some cognitive stuff. And so right there, it just puts you in the headspace that like, oh yeah, if he does something weird, it's this brain tumor. It's not him. So there's an excuse built in, and you can really see that Aaron is like, okay, it's pretty fucking weird, but you know, he did kind of warn me, so I'll stick it out. And like, we see his like sticking it out ends up being his, you know, what gets him killed in the end. I just appreciated a line where it's like, yeah, you're going to see some weird shit, so hang on, you're in for the ride. And it kind of like, it doesn't give him like a full excuse, but it's like anything that's out of the ordinary, you can't attribute to this brain tumor. And so Aaron has to decide, like, is it past my limit of like wanting to hang out?
Well, if to put it in like a classic horror archetype, it's more Lovecraftian, right? Because it's like you don't really know what you're looking at. The uncertainty of Joseph's motivations and ability is palpable, and there's like just enough humanity in him to make you want to like stick it out. And he gets excited about stuff, and his kind of enthusiasm is a little bit infectious. And Aaron himself seems like a slightly dour person, so he maybe is enjoying this sort of like liveliness that is maybe not as common in his own life. And it's like a lot of money, right? It's like $1,000 for one day of filming, and it gives him the money up front. So in the kind of common scheme of like commercial enterprise and transaction, like it's going quite well for Aaron. And so he feels a kind of obligation, I guess. And it is a weird, like, I think this movie could be used as almost like a training manual for gaslighting and manipulation and like the signs to watch out for in such a thing, because of how good Joseph is at it. Right? Because by the end of it, it's clear that everything he's done to Aaron throughout the movie is like pure manipulation and calculated manipulation, and mm-hmm. that he's like the whole point of this filming is about Aaron, not anything he's doing, right? Like he,
right?
It could have been anyone who answered that ad, but now that it's Aaron, Aaron is the actual subject of Joseph's movie, not the other way around, you know?
Yeah.
and like that's just chilling.
Mm-hmm. It's chilling, and it's chilling in the way that, you know, it, you said at the top that it's more horror than some of the stuff we've done, because this is just a guy who's, mm-hmm. you know, got some antisocial and psychotic brain patterns, but he's not superhuman. He's not supernatural. He's not paranormal. He's just a creep, you know?
He's just committed to his sadism. He's so committed to his sadism that he knows how to manipulate like the better angels of our nature to get to murder, right? Like you have to imagine, mm-hmm. like, because at the end of the movie, we see all of the like DVD cases, presumably all the different people that he's murdered, as like mm-hmm. he is a psychological expert, you know? And, mm-hmm. and the truth is, unfortunately, a lot of this is one of the things that make psychopaths so terrifying is that they understand how the human brain works. It just doesn't affect them, you know? So they can mm-hmm. quite like they don't feel any guilt or compunction at undermining and manipulating the sympathies that most of us have, you know? And it's mm-hmm. like, it's just, and yeah, I mean, it's, This is why that we have an evolved sense of being wary of strangers, because you just don't know what their motivations are, you know?
Yeah, and he knows that, but he's so good at disarming Aaron, and maybe Aaron is like the type of person who's always
Aaron
gonna
is
see
fucking
the other
stupid.
Side. Oh, he's not a smart man, especially at the second half of the movie. Like once he escapes and then just like. Gets a DVD at his home address. He doesn't like call any of his friends. He doesn't have his parents who can be like, hey, maybe I'll visit you for a couple weeks. You know, he doesn't like just, he's like, no, I'm just going to stay at my house that he knows I live at and leave some doors open at night. And that's just the way it's going to be. Like, no problems here. It's just.
Well, there were some inconsistencies. You know, when he calls the cops and he's like, I don't know how to contact him. How did you contact him in the first place? Huh?
Craigslist or something? I thought he answered the ad on Craigslist. Like, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, I can link you the ad. That's how I got in contact with him, right?
Just keep talking. I'll be right back.
Okay. And then, you know, I think it's pretty clear in this movie that he's got, like, he took this job because he's got money issues, right? Like, mm-hmm. maybe he's a little bit down right now, and but, you know, did you see the size of his house in Southern California?
Yeah, he's got a huge house.
Yeah,
he's got a
by
huge
himself?
House. Yeah.
I don't buy that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The fact that, like, this movie was literally just two people, I think really, I don't know, was maybe supposed to represent how isolated Aaron was, and that's the kind of person that Joseph would prey on, and maybe he, you know, I can certainly see a scenario in which Joseph picks his victims with the like absolute utmost of care, and, you know, finding Aaron was like winning the, you know, serial killer lottery and being like, oh, this guy'll just do anything, no matter what I do to him. Yeah. He's gonna be back. This is great. Like, you know, that's why at the end he's like, he addresses Aaron being like, you are my favorite one of all. And I think, yeah, maybe that's there, but it's also just like, okay, we have to just accept that there's nobody else Aaron could even try to reach out to, but I don't accept it.
Maybe Aaron just was ready to die, you know?
Maybe.
Because, like, we saw at the end, like, Aaron didn't turn around at all, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of, like, was just sitting on the bench, just chilling, and then Joseph points that out. It's like, why didn't you turn around? It's like, oh, because you thought, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, you know what? We'll take it one step further. Aaron just was like, you know what? Joseph's going to kill me. I think I'm ready for it.
He's just, I'm ready. He's ready to be done. He's yeah. like, I can't do anything about it. I guess I'll just go to this lake.
Ready to give up.
And get ready to die. And the thing that I find fascinating about this movie is at the very end of the movie, you find yourself agreeing with Joseph, because I'm sitting there watching the footage of him sitting at the lake. And I'm like, dude, you're not even looking behind you. You're not turning around. You're not suspicious. You're not on alert at all. And then to have Joseph, the person who's like a murderer, also say the same thing by being like, Aaron, why didn't you turn around like and look? I'm just like, I don't want to be agreeing with this guy. I don't want to be on the same on the same page as this guy who hires people and murders them with an axe like over and over again. But here I am being like, yeah, Joseph, I agree with you.
Well, I think that's weird. that's a good meta movie thing, that like that's the kind of thing that makes a movie memorable, when it's off kilter like that somehow, where you're kind of like logically agreeing with the murderer against the victim. You know, like that's not how it's supposed
not to victim
to be.
Blame, but what the fuck? Yeah,
that's not how it's not how it's supposed to be. So I think, yeah, to me, the ending of this movie is one of the, well, it's the most memorable part of the movie, I think, other than maybe Peach Fuzz. But
we'll talk about Peach Fuzz.
I distinctly remember the end of this movie, and I remember feeling more angry at Aaron than at Joseph for Aaron's murder.
Right? That's wrong. Just, you should be like, no, I can't. I have to be mad at the murderer.
You know, so this is a bit of a tangent, but I recently watched Napoleon, the new movie with Joaquin Phoenix as Napoleon. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, there's a lot to say about it. Some good, some bad. But one of the things that they talk about a bunch of times in the movie is like, you know, the 19th century version of depression was called melancholy, right? That they just had she's feeling melancholic, or I've been feeling the melancholy lately. And I just couldn't help but feel like that word so perfectly encapsulates Aaron throughout so much of this. Is like there's some like emotional inhibition in him, preventing him from seeing the danger, you know, and I think melancholy is the, like, when he's sitting on that bench before he's killed, he does not look happy, you know. There's not even anything about him. If you knew no context of this movie, you just looked and you saw that guy sitting on the bench like that, you'd be like, I bet you that guy's going having some troubles. That guy seems troubled.
Yeah,
he seems sad. And just his like something must be taking his attention away from paying attention to the surroundings, where he's going to be met with some potentially violent person that he's been having a lot of weird interactions with. Like, all of my survival alarms are going off from the very beginning. And certainly from the point where Joseph is showing me pictures that he took of me arriving and then not answering the door. Like, yeah. And even
like his apologies for those. Go ahead. Sorry. Yeah.
And at the bench, he looks around once, doesn't see anything, and turns back. Like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a memorable movie, and mostly for that.
Yeah. And it's so like it just strains the, you know, believability of somebody's like good nature to extend that far, because like, Joseph shows Aaron who he is over and over again, to the point where he's like, yeah, you know what? I'm ashamed. I took pictures of you while you're coming. I just wanted to get to know you. And like, Aaron just has some, like, he's got some cognitive acrobatics to just like square this away and be like, no, oh, okay, I can see why. I can understand like your reasoning behind it. And it's like, something's, you know, you're not scared enough, and you should be more scared earlier.
Totally.
Or like when they're running in the forest, or they're trying to go find this like heart lake, and he's like, hey, we're going pretty far. Do you know how to get back? And he's like, nah, I don't know. It's like, I haven't been tracking the number of forks in the road we've been taking. He's like, me neither. Yeah, no worries. I'd be like, ah, no, it's not right.
That's not right.
Get out of here.
So one of my initial questions was like, okay, you got this brain tumor and you're going to die in like a month or two. Like, why aren't you spending this time with your pregnant wife? You know?
Well, he actually does answer that. He said, because he What is he like when they're first starting out with this video? He's like, yeah, every day is a gift. Every day is a journey. I could spend it with my family, but I'm here spending it with you, my new friend.
And yeah, like, that's and a red like, flag.
Big red flag.
That's weird.
But also, yeah.
And wouldn't you
anything more about that?
Would you not see a brain tumor the size of a baseball? I feel like baseballs are big enough to see if they're like, that is a huge ass lump of your brain. If it's a baseball.
I mean, I don't think so. It could, it wouldn't like deform the skull necessarily. Mm. And I think it would, it depends if it's like choking out other areas of the brain to like, take up the space or basically mutate those cells. It might just be like the area in the brain that is cancer is like the size of a baseball. Like all those, you know, all those cells are cancerous.
I see.
But yeah.
Listen, the amount of times in Grey's Anatomy that inoperable brain tumor came up and they operated on it anyway, just go to Seattle, Joseph. They have a great hospital there.
I mean, it looked like they were in the Pacific Northwest. I think it was maybe California, but
it was, Northern California.
Southern California.
Southern California, oh.
Yeah, San Bernardino?
Bernardino?
Well, the,
Bernardino.
There was Crestline was the, like, the where the cabin was. That was where the forest was. And that looked like maybe Northern California or maybe Endor. I don't know. Like, you know, something like that.
That's actually the same place. That's the trick of it.
It's Southern California.
Oh, okay. Southern California.
Yeah.
I trust you.
Well, I mean, even Aaron at the lake, like, it's, Joseph says in that video, come to the lake. It's a public place. It's safe. I'm like, okay. Just because you say that. You know, it's like, okay, you're right. I'll take you at your word. You're not going to, like, it's not like you'd actually murder me in public.
Did either of you hear the chainsaw noises?
Yeah. I did, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, there's a chainsaw. And it's like, nope, we're going manual.
We're going manual. Yeah, no, it just, the fact that he's like, yeah, I will take you at your word this time, even though the other five times in this movie I've taken you at your word, you've lied to me. But, you know, fool me six times, shame on you.
Yeah, there's that line from Basketball where Squeak says, hey, you guys rag on me 13 or 14 more times, I'm out of here.
Yeah. And yeah, the fact that nobody else, like, this is such an isolating movie that there's not even any bystanders, there's, like, nobody around. I feel like
even though there's that is more everywhere. Like a,
yeah, that's maybe more a statement on, like, everyone's like wrapped up in their own world to notice what's going on around them. But it was just like, I don't know. This is pretty ballsy. How does he know there's not going to be anyone at the lake? How does he know that like nobody's going to intervene? The logics around doing this many murders for this long without getting caught at all is like, yeah, maybe this guy does have superpowers. And it's like the superpower ability to plan everyone's schedule and manipulate everyone to like not be around, but yeah
I think like you know, obviously Aaron didn't get to dictate any part of the meetup and, you know, the location, but I think he should have employed some of the more modern ways of selling something on Kijiji or Craigslist, is meet at a police station, you know. Isn't that what people do now when they do, like, they sell stuff? You're encouraged to meet at like a third party location, more often not like a police station. There's like little parking lots in police stations where you can do transactions, and it's all like video monitored, right?
I mean, but this, I guess, 2012, so that's,
but I guess this was also the lake was also video monitored.
Was it? No, that was just
Aaron's camera.
Aaron put his like phone down or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Video monitored.
Right Okay. Yes, literally video monitored.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
My phone is on speed dial to the cops and I'm taking a video of this. Yeah. Neither of those things helped you out because you just didn't turn
looked
your head
at the water instead of where he might come from.
Yeah. What do you think? He's going to swim to you? Come on.
It's just like swimming down. Hey, buddy, what's up? Yeah.
It's like a bad Bryan Adams song. Oh, I'm going to swim to you. It cuts like an axe.
There you go. I think, though, that Aaron maybe did feel like some sort of kinship and friendship towards Joseph, especially when they end up finding the like heart-shaped pool in the mountains. And there's that like scene of them like, you know, splashing their feet in there and like having a fun time. You know, I thought that was like the happiest that we had seen Aaron the entire time when they find this lake pool. And so maybe he was just like desperate to recapture it. He definitely spent a lot of footage telling us about the dreams he had at the pool that was a hot tub and they were both wearing peach fuzz masks. But so maybe he just was like, whatever, I'll be friends with this guy. It's the only friend I have. But to your point, Alex, your Kijiji point, I know that I have a group text with like some of my friends, and for a while when like one of my friends was moving to his own place and like buying cheap furniture on Kijiji, he would send a message and be like, hey, I'm going to this guy's house. If I don't message you in 2 hours, come look for me. It's like, yeah, cool.
Contingency just in case. Plan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
But
should we talk about Peach Fuzz?
I definitely think we need to talk about Peach Fuzz.
Okay.
Alex, so here's the listeners, what's Peach Fuzz?
Peach Fuzz is a scary wolf mask that Joseph was wearing, that he initially told Aaron that it was a thing from his childhood that his dad would wear and sing a song to him, and it was actually really fun and not scary at all. But in reality, it was, we can see that Joseph has some sexual preferences where he enjoys role-playing a animal, I guess in this case Peach Fuzz, which is a wolf, while he has what was the animalistic sex, was that
animalistic sex? But yeah, that was, I think he framed it the way that like he did that for his wife because she was like unsatisfied in,
because
like,
she was allegedly looking at like animal porn, right?
Yeah that's right, she was looking at animal porn. Yeah. because your internet browser was full and I was like
Yeah, you gotta clear your history if your internet's too slow. Yeah.
Yes. If your internet slows down, it's because there's too many files in your history. Okay.
It's yeah,
not how I remember the internet working in 2012, but
yeah, so he said it was his wife, but then apparently it's not his wife, which it was his sister. So yeah. did he just make this story up?
I think we are to assume that everything he told Aaron was a fabrication. I think there was no brain tumor, there was no pregnant wife, there was no, you know, the peach fuzz mask, like that. All of the stuff he told him to get him there was all a lie. I think
I feel 100%. Like possibly the story of like the animalistic stuff is maybe like the truth of it might be that that was one of his previous victims that he peach fuzzed them.
Yeah, I think we as a society should be, you know, maybe I don't want to say shaming, but maybe bringing awareness to things that, you know, there's some things you just keep to yourself. I think, you know, Joseph, there's no need to tell Aaron all this stuff, as well as me, the audience. I don't want to know. I don't want to know about your peach fuzz mask and what you do with it. You know, if you do it, just keep that to yourself. I don't want to know about it. It's just like,
consenting adults behind closed doors. Just like,
consent away without my knowledge. I don't need to know.
but
it's weird fuck is what I'm trying to say.
It's weird as fuck. It's absolutely weird as fuck. And if you have seen the movie and you've seen Peach Fuzz, the idea that anyone in any universe could look at the Peach Fuzz mask and go like, yeah, no, that looks like a friendly guy. Like, it's like a fully snarling wolf. You know, it's got bloodshot eyes and gigantic fangs. And it just, he always wears it and stands completely still. So it's just like unsettling. Like,
there's no need to be this open about it, you know?
Yeah. Also, you know, I like that Aaron is unsettled at that point. Well, he's unsettled earlier, but like he's leaving and at no point is he like, is this maybe something we want to include on a videotape to your unborn child? Like a story of like a graphic tie down.
Well, because Joseph didn't want that to be recorded.
Oh, that's right. He put the camera down.
Yeah, he recorded it in secret. So yeah. Aaron was already having red flags about that. He's like, I should probably record this.
Well, and he drugged. Like, yeah. He drugged Joseph.
That's right. He did. Right? Put some Benadryl. Yeah.
And I just like, so if Angela is this guy's real sister, is she not a little bit more like curious about all of this stuff? Like, I don't know. It didn't. She said maybe to Aaron, he's got problems. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. The Amanda to Joseph Jigsaw.
You beat me by 1 second.
Ah!
But yeah, like anytime she's talking to him and it's like, if she is like a genuine person who's in good faith trying to like alert him to something, she has a lot of time on that phone call that she could say things instead of just like, no, you just got to leave. Just get out. It's like a bit more information. But also, Aaron, take that. Just go. Be like, oh, this person who is like has a relationship to Joseph is wanting me to leave. Yeah, okay, maybe I'll leave. I don't need to worry about my car keys. I'll walk.
Yeah. So that part was a little confusing to me as well. So like, it's the middle of the night. He like gets into a little kerfuffle with Joseph in order to escape the house, and it's evident that he does escape. And he's like, I had to get my car towed. It's like, how? Mm-hmm. Did you, like, go to a neighbor's house? Did you use your own phone? Did you use Joseph's phone that you still had on you? If you have Joseph's phone, can you give it to the cops? Be like, yeah, this is the guy who's stalking me. This is his phone. I don't know. It was just wildly inconsistent towards the second half of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, you just have to kind of be like, we accept it. We accept that this happens. But I was having problems with Aaron's choices in his decision making, which is, you know, not specific to this horror movie where a person is making bad choices, but it was just yeah, you have ways, you have a history, you have like a paper trail, even if it's electronic, like, yeah, where's all that evidence?
I will say that the two times it was used in this movie, I thought it was really cool, is when you think you're watching, you know, the found footage first person point of view, and then it turns out the camera was pointing at the TV playing a video of that.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
That was cool.
Because, you know, right when he escapes, you see Joseph, like, digging, I don't know, his own grave or whatever.
Big hole on the side of a hill.
Big holes, yeah. And he's bringing garbage bags out, and he's throwing them in. And then you're like, damn, like, Joseph must have got Aaron, and how he's filming whatever it is he's doing now. And then, like, you see the camera get pulled back, and it's like, oh no, we were looking at a TV of a video that Joseph had sent Aaron, and Aaron's watching it right now. I was like, damn, that's really cool. And then I was like, why the fuck is Aaron filming this now? those were the two thoughts.
For the police,
of course.
Bring that for the police. But also, there's like the scene at the house at nighttime that's really, really like spooky. You know, we see Joseph like turn the camera on and is filming Aaron asleep. And so there's documented footage of somebody else operating the camera for Aaron. And there's also a scene where he's like looking around the house, and we just see the camera's like pointing at the front door, and we can see Joseph standing outside the screen for like 30 seconds. You're telling me Aaron never reviewed that tape? Like, he commits the like same exact faux pas that everyone in Paranormal Activity does, where they just film it but never look at it? It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that was my biggest issue with this movie and the found footage format, is like, found footage is a really, really good storytelling medium when it works, but when it doesn't work, it's just like, what's the point of it? And it doesn't work more often than it does work, in my opinion.
That being said, I still really enjoyed this movie. Like, I thought it was fun. I thought that the number of jump scares was appropriate, even though they were like very cheesy and you could see them coming, and it was literally just a man going like, ah, and rushing the camera. But I really, really, really liked the last jump scare in this movie, which I just laughed a lot, is when Aaron is, pardon me, where Joseph is watching the footage, like watching the footage he took from Aaron's phone, watching him kill Aaron at the lake. And then he's just like, man, what's this guy doing? And then the very last shot is Joseph on the camera jump scares at the jump scares at the phone, and like Joseph watching the footage also jerks back and is scared of his own jump scare. It's just like very funny.
It was true. Yeah,
jump scared myself.
Yeah.
It's like you knew you were doing it. Yeah.
It's like he's jump scaring the current film he's making by pretending to be scared of his own jump scare that we are also watching.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just
layers.
Okay.
This movie's
about Dante's seven layer was it seven layers of jump scare?
Nine. But yeah. Yes.
Nine. Okay.
Yeah. So you're thinking of Seven Layer Dip.
Ah. Which is also really good.
That's so El good. Dante's.
Dante's. Yeah, but just I don't know. I know we've bemoaned the unoriginality of jump scares in these movies, but having someone be scared of a jump scare they made to like double jump scare us, I was just like, well, it might be a hat on a hat, but you did it.
all of the jump scares I think are funny and not annoying because it's like the movie is self-aware about like so like a human being jumping out and jump scaring you is like the literal version of a jump scare, right? So they must know like, oh, this is the found footage cliche, let's make it a cliche by definition and do it on purpose. And it's just kind of funny because it's like, wait, Joseph, where are you? Blah, whoa, so scary. I'm just kidding. It's like,
okay. I'm sorry. I was doing a joke. Yeah, and just to champion Mark Duplass's like acting in this as well, because I didn't know where it was going when he was a psychopath or that he was gonna like murder him. But one of the big clues that's like kind of, I mean, I felt it was a little bit subtle in the film was when they go to the diner and he's like, oh, we're gonna go here. You know, the pancakes are the best. It was a tradition. I'd go get pancakes here. And then he sits down at the booth and he's like, hey, so what looks good here? And you're just like, oh, wait a second.
I thought you.
Yeah. And said... Aaron picks up on that, right?
He does pick up on that.
You know, Aaron picked up on so many things, but the most obvious one was just don't go to the lake.
Don't go to the lake. I mean, sometimes you can be holding the red flags and being like, this is a pretty red color. Oh, well. Thanks for the red flag. That's nice. That's a nice gift. Just can't see the forest for the trees.
Freud would say he had a death wish.
Yeah. What were you gonna say, Alex?
Well, it's like I think it's quite poetic where he was trying to throw away the locket and throw away like the video. And you know, sometimes you just can't throw away your problems. You gotta deal with them.
Or at least take that $1,000 you got in cash and get a plane ticket somewhere, man. Just go. You know, don't go home.
You know what? Maybe. I wonder if this was a targeted thing from the very start where Joseph was like, I want this guy. Oh, this guy's a videographer. Okay, let's put a phony Craigslist ad up and we will only answer it if Aaron is the one that calls us, you know?
Well, we learned Aaron was his favorite.
And maybe that is a testament to this level of sadism and psychopathy that he has curated his like kill list to like a specific person and is able to psychologically manipulate them into the exact scenario. So
now that's creep.
That's creep. Maybe we'll see more more creeps in the past. I don't know how Creep 2 ends. But the fact that they have that whole cabinet of like hundreds of or at least dozens of like videotapes of similar things, like, you know, we could revisit this universe with like other creeps, more creeps.
It was creepy. It reminded me of Barbarian, even though Barbarian came out after. Yeah. You know, of all like with just labels with names, yeah, or descriptions of people.
Yeah, which is also funny because this is a 2014 movie and we talked about how Mark and Jay Duplass sort of cut their teeth in the comedy realm. And we're seeing now, like especially in the last couple of years, like so many comedy people moving into horror is like it's a rich field. And I wonder if maybe in some way Creep like inspired, you know, Jordan Peele to do Get Out or inspired Zach Cregger to do Barbarian or like these other, this like sort of in the last decade or so of like comedy people doing horror.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Have we got any final thoughts about Creep before we switch into the second half of the program, do some ratings and stuff? Good suit and tight. What you got, Luke? Any final thoughts?
It was a pretty good movie.
It's a pretty good movie. Mm-hmm. That's it. Alex, anything you didn't mention about?
No, not really. I think I stuff? Yeah, talked you what I talked. Talking. Yeah.
I definitely don't think that you could get a mask of the quality that was Peach Fuzz at a 99-cent store, but I also haven't been to the 99-cent stores in America, so who knows? Maybe they got great stuff in there. All right, then. Shall we choose a scariest part of the movie?
I feel for this one, we have to choose a creepiest part of the movie, a capotum,
if you will. Oh, of course. What was the creepiest part of the movie? Luke, after you.
I think, like, I'd say straightforwardly creepy is, like, when Joseph is filming him asleep and then cuts a piece of his hair. Like, mm-hmm. That's just so real life creepy, like, to think that that would happen. Like, that's why I think the creepy stuff in Paranormal Activity is so creepy. It's like there's just something about somebody watching you sleep that I think is the definition of creepy. You know?
Yeah.
It's like next level voyeurism is to do it while you're sleeping. And then, but I think I have to give a creep shout out to Peach Fuzz's like sexual grinding on the door. grinding and growling while just before Aaron takes off, like that's the last straw. That was so creepy with that scene.
Yeah. It's very creepy. I had forgotten that we have that shot of Joseph cutting a piece of Aaron's hair, which is, again, like, why didn't you take that, show that to a police officer and be like, hello, look at this person who came into my home and cut my hair. Because
he doesn't watch his own tapes that he films, so why film them in the first place?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think that is a very creepy scene. The tubby time scene, we didn't really talk about it, was like when you think he's just a man dying of a brain tumor, it's kind of like a tragic, sad scene of him like pretending to give this like infant a bath. And Mark Duplass is doing a really great job acting against nothing. Like he's holding a pretend baby. There's nothing there. And he's like singing him little songs. That's very, you know, sad. But then in the highlight of it, the movie being what it is, that's fucking creepy. Just being in a bathtub.
Holding like, a pretend baby.
Bathing my fake baby. Yeah, it's just like, okay, something's wrong. You should be getting in your car, Aaron. Just be like, here, you know what? Here's $500 back. I'll see you. Good luck. So that's my capotum. What about you, Alex?
Yeah, it's the Peach Fuzz door scene. Just very, did not like. It's my least favorite part, but also the creepiest part.
Yeah. There's too many times when I got the sense that Aaron was relying exclusively on the camera to be his eyes. Like he's like showing the camera around corners and showing the, you know, like instead of like looking around with your head. And I was just like, I know we can't see him moving, but I don't get the feeling that he's like whipping around and looking around and like looking anywhere. It just feels like he's like, yeah. Nope, this is cinema verite. Hey,
that's yeah. why like at videographer school they say make it your eyes. It's like method,
that's true.
Method acting, but method filming.
Yeah, but I mean even the guy in Rec knew to just put the camera up into the attic and like spin it around instead of poking his dumb head up there.
Well, I would say the guy in Rec was smarter than Aaron.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay. So then let's rate this thing. Luke, do you want to rate it out of something? You pick this one. Why don't you rate it out of something?
As my name would say, I think we should rate it out of 5 fuzzy peaches.
5 fuzzy peaches. It's a great one. All right. What do you give it?
I think that like when you take on board everything that this movie is, what it's trying to be, its execution is quite good. You know, it's not a blockbuster. It never tried to be. And so I think the output is quite impressive given the input into the movie. So 3.5 fuzzy peaches.
Yeah, $0. That's an impressive input.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. I was ready to be annoyed by a found footage movie. I was ready to like have to watch a really long movie. And this might sound like a stabbing with faint praise, but like a short movie, like I love it. But no, it was like engaging. I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. I was so unsettled by Mark Duplass's performance that he, you know, he nailed it. The instructions, the title was the instructions, Creep. And he's like, no notes, I got it. I'm giving this one 4 out of 5. 4 fuzzy peaches out of 5. Mm. Alex Wan.
Yeah, this was a very fine movie. It was very creepy, as the title suggests. And yeah, unsettling and well done for what it was. And more pros than faults, in my opinion. So I will give it 3.25 fuzzy peaches out of 5.
Solid. Solid scores all around. Awesome, awesome. Well then, let's move into the something to cheer section. Luke, Mason, what are you cheering?
I'm cheering a renaissance of Really True Fiction. I have released a couple episodes in the last couple months, and I'm going to release another one later today. So
very exciting. RTF makes a return.
Yeah.
Is it you and other guests, or you and David again?
It's mostly been other guests. I think David and I are going to do one again in the near future, but I have been extending the invitation to other people around. So that's been fun.
Cool.
Very fun. Very exciting. That's always good to get behind the microphones and talk some fun shit. I am cheering the fact that I was doing my courses for the upcoming winter semester, and I found out that, in fact, I already have enough credits to graduate with a degree in psychology. So I have met all my little boxes that need to be ticked, and I can graduate in the summer. And so this upcoming semester, I am taking one course only, because they're offering it for the very first time at Concordia, and I want them to keep offering it. So I'm keeping my enrollment in that course. But my last semester of school, I only have to take one course. So I hope it's less stress. I hope it's less pressure. And I can just like learn some cool shit and have fun. And then I'm done school. Very exciting. Wow.
Congratulations. Yeah. In the future. Not now. You're not
2 years.
Done yet.
Not now. Congratulations. Not yet. 2 years before your 40th birthday.
Yeah, exactly.
2 full years.
Nice.
2 entire years. Yeah, exactly. Listen, yeah.
Listen, yeah.
There will be... Wait, no, never mind. You got it. 100% no notes. Alex, what are you cheering?
I bought a Roomba over the holidays.
Okay, a little robot vacuum. Love it.
Yeah, and it's been nice to, you know, just have it zip around and vacuum up some fur and some cat stuff, you know. And just part of 2024 is I want to, you know, clean a little bit every week rather than clean a lot at the end of the month. So
sure,
it's been very helpful in doing that.
Solid goal. Excellent. Thanks, Roomba.
I always think it sounds like a dance, you know. Do a little Roomba.
Do a little Roomba. A little Roomba rumba. Do you ever have to like rescue it from like getting stuck somewhere?
As of now, no, but I'm limiting it to, you know, just the one room. Yeah.
I have to ask, did you try to feed it like that one scene in Arrested Development where Buster's like, oh, it's hungry, and just throws a chip on the floor?
No, not yet, but if it ever does look hungry, maybe I'll try that out.
Awesome. Great cheers, everyone. That will pretty much do it for this episode of Nothing to Fear. Thank you, Luke and Alex, for joining me, and thanks everybody for listening. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can find us on Instagram, Nothing to Fear Podcast. Yeah, that's the best way to do it. And Luke, you maybe already mentioned this, but people can hear Really True Fiction.
Yeah,
new episodes. Yeah,
yeah. I'm
check that out.
Yeah, releasing another one today, and I feel like they're going to be coming out monthly. Maybe. So that's fun.
Monthly's good.
Something to work.
Is that a cinema show that you were doing on the radio still going, or is that
Yeah, it's every 2 weeks. It's, I don't know, it's hard to maintain the torrid pace of the weekly radio show.
It is. Perhaps
you've noticed.
You know, having a near worldwide lockdown really gave us a lot of time to do podcasts, and it wasn't exactly sustainable once the world opened back up again.
That's true.
Yeah. Oh, well. What about you, Alex? I notice One Song a Day has been a little bit silent the last couple of weeks. So
yeah, we done. We're so done.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a good run. We might come back. We might not.
What about like One Song a Year?
That's a lot of pressure for that one song.
That one song.
Yeah.
You're just going to have to listen to one song for 2025, and it's whatever Alex tells. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we might be back. We might not. I don't really care, but
no,
we'll see.
That's fine. And nothing else going on? Nothing else you care about shouting out?
No, I don't care about anything.
You don't care? You're
except for this show. You should all listen to this show. Mm.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll be back next month with another episode. But until then, I'll say goodbye. Luke, would you like to say goodbye?
I would like to say goodbye.
There we go. Very well. Alex, would you like to say goodbye?
I wouldn't like to. I would love to. Goodbye.
Oh, very nice. All right. Remember, folks, they're just movies. There's...
Hello, my name is Peach Fuzz. I might look like I eat you up. But I'm as friendly as a rabbit. And I'd make a very good friend. Peach Fuzz, I am here. And there's nothing to fear.